All rise. The Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning. Please be seated. Welcome to this session of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Today we will hear three cases. Oral argument normally occurs in the courtroom at the Thomas J. Moyer Ohio Judicial Center in Columbus. But if you're watching online, we're not there today. We're coming to you from the Honorable Sandra S. Beckwith Courtroom at the University of Cincinnati College of Law. Judge Beckwith was a trailblazer in public service. She was the first woman to serve in the Hamilton County Municipal Court and the Court of Common Pleas Domestic Relations Division. She was also the first woman chief judge of the United States District Court for the Southern District of Ohio. She is one of many distinguished alumni of this great law school. Today marks our 81st session of Offsite Court. It is a tradition reminiscent of the early days of Ohio statehood, where there were only three justices and they heard cases where they occurred. Yes, that meant they rode the circuit and they traveled Ohio to where the case occurred. Today we came by car at the invitation of the College of Law to hold oral arguments in the first law school west of the Allegheny Mountains, the fourth oldest continuously operating law school in the country. We periodically take our oral arguments into Ohio communities so that members of the public, especially students and faculty, can share in the exchange with the judiciary. We're honored to have students here from six of Cincinnati area high schools: Walnut Hills, the Spencer Center for Gifted and Exceptional Students, Cincinnati Preparatory Academy, Turpin High School, Anderson High School, and Seven Hills. Undergraduate students from Xavier University, the University of Cincinnati, and students from the College of Law will also be attending. In our American Republic, citizens' understanding the institutions of government is foundational. The judiciary has an important task in our society. We do not make laws. That is for the legislature. Nor do we carry them out, for that is the role of the executive branch. The judicial branch has only the power of reason and decision. What a statute means, what a constitutional provision says. Citizens, too, have a responsibility to educate yourselves about our government and participate in it as a voter, an active citizen in our process. Thank you for taking time to be an active citizen today by joining all of us. We're happy to be here. My colleagues and I want to thank our hosts at the University of Cincinnati College of Law, the many people who work to make this session possible: Dean Michael Whiteman, the staff of the College of Law, particularly Assistant Deans Cassandra Jeter Bailey, Denise Durbin and Nora Wagner, and Tanya Hampton. Thanks to the faculty and students, particularly student leaders, for making today possible. A big thank you to the superintendents, principals, and teachers of all of the high schools who will come here today, for the leadership of the universities who make it possible. Teachers from every school receive summary articles previewing the cases today. They help students, along with lawyers, to learn about those issues that are being presented today. They were written by the public information staff, and anyone can access them at our website. The teachers worked to understand those issues with the students in conjunction with the education of the lawyers. A big thank you to them. And now the students with us, you get to hear both sides of the argument. You decide, and then wait for our decision. We also want to thank the Ohio State Bar Association for their support. Once again, thank you to the entire Hamilton County community And to our audience and viewers watching us on television or from their computers, welcome to this session of Offsite Court. In our first case, 2022-0784, Allison Harris versus Dustin Hildebrand. On behalf of the appellant, Mr. Bordes. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for agreeing to be here today, gentlemen.
What a pleasure it is, Your Honor. And when I saw that this was going to be here at the law school, I was just thrilled. I've done this one other time in another state, and it was really, I got a lot out of it from the young people. So thank you for asking me to be a part of it. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
May it please the court. In this case, one of the primary questions is, does immunity attach at all if an officer is off duty? If an officer is off duty, we would respectfully submit on behalf of Ms. Harris that immunity doesn't apply in the first instance. However, even if immunity would arguably apply, then the courts must look at whether one of the exceptions to immunity applies. And one of the exceptions here is in play and clearly applicable, which is that the officer is not entitled to immunity because he was acting manifestly outside the scope of his employment. It's also important to note that here in this case, we didn't sue the officer or the political subdivision in his official capacity. The officer was undisputedly off duty as evidenced by even his own supervisor's affidavit and his own admissions and all the evidence.
Counsel, wasn't it required that the dog live with the officer at home? So,
yes, Your Honor, that was a requirement of the job, is that the officer had to keep and harbor the dog. He had to take him home, absolutely. And like many other dog owners or keepers or harbors of dog throughout the state, the revised code applies liability when a dog bites. And the argument that we would submit, Your Honor, is that the revised code does not make any exceptions in that regard.
Thank you.
But we believe that this case is distinguished from some of the cases that are set forth by the defendant, the appellee, and it's their brief, such as Alden, Perry, In re TBY versus Martins Ferry, all cases relied upon that by them. Because we did not sue the officer in his individual capacity, we did not sue a political subdivision. That makes this case very different than those cases where those things occurred in those cases. Additionally, if it were somehow determined that immunity does apply, the exception does exist and will be applicable here. I think it's important to note that Judge Brazees, the trial court judge, didn't determine that my client was entitled to summary judgment, didn't determine even necessarily that immunity doesn't apply or that the exceptions don't apply or anything like that. He just simply said, this should go to the jury. This is a jury question, which was a reasonable approach, that reasonable minds could differ with respect to this. And not only could they differ, they have. So far, four judges have looked at this, the trial court judge and three judges of the appellate court.
So what are the facts that are in dispute? You say it's a jury question.
Sure. Thank you, Your Honor. I think the facts that are in dispute are this. Whether or not the officer was acting, first of all, applies, whether or not the exception applies, because whether or not he was acting outside the scope.
That doesn't sound like a factual issue. That sounds like a legal issue.
Well, I thought that at first, too, Your Honor. But then this court has held that whether or not someone is acting within the course and scope is a question for a jury. I thought that at first, too, until I read the case law and saw that. And I was.
But are there any facts in dispute?
I think there are.
It's not a fact, right?
I think there are some facts in dispute as to whether or not the officer was engaging in some type of government or proprietary type thing as a part of keeping this dog or not. I think that.
Is that a fact or is that a legal determination based on a fact?
I think that I could see how you could see that either way, but I would submit, Your Honor, that it's factual.
How's it factual?
I think in terms of what it is that is required by that officer to do, I think comes into play with respect to perhaps testimony from the supervisors, testimony from the officer himself for things such as this. Is he required to have the dog around other people? Is he required to engage in some type of exercise with the dog? Those are all things that are factual, which I think testimony would have to be heard on in order to determine whether or not he was acting within the scope at the time.
Counsel, what is the strongest fact in your perception that you would argue to a jury that the officer was acting outside the scope of his employment?
Sure. I think the fact that this particular officer turned his backyard into a crime scene by taking the dog out there, issuing alert commands. When the officer says, Belmont County K-9, it gives the command, that tells the dog be ready to attack. He gave that command. He was doing that in his backyard during the course of this barbecue. Additionally, he got drugs out of his police cruiser, hid them around the yard, and had this dog go looking for him, basically turning his backyard during the course of this barbecue into a crime scene for which a dog is not able to comprehend. Now, hey, an hour later, now this isn't the crime scene anymore, you know. And when these same people are there, that the dog was now going out looking for the drugs. And this, remember, these dogs are not just able to sniff out drugs. They're also takedown dogs. They're supposed to be able to take people to the ground by grabbing them, biting them, and taking them to the ground. And the fact that the officer turned his backyard into a crime scene vis-a-vis this dog, that makes it very difficult then when the dog goes and eats dinner and then comes back out, and this same scene where my client is perhaps standing where the drugs were previously or is picking something up because they were playing a yard game at the same spot, that for the dog to be able to comprehend, this is no longer a crime scene. And that precisely is what they say in their brief is the why they're supposed to bring these dogs home, is that so they can learn how to behave.
Counsel, you're not saying, you're not saying that the fact that the K-9 was loose in the backyard when the deputy was having a social event would take him outside of the scope of his employment.
I don't think necessarily that, Your Honor. I think that it's the, and that's where I think we have to look at the conduct of the officer. If it was simply, hey, people over at my house and the dog bit someone, different story. But that's not what happened here. That's not the facts here. The facts here are that this officer wanted to show off and use the dog as entertainment. And, you know, it's no different than, let's say that an officer is required to take their weapon home. Let's say all of a sudden, and they're supposed to be immune because they have to have their weapon with them. But let's say that the officer said, you know what, let's play a game of hot potato. And here's the gun. Let's all toss it around. And while somebody's catching it, it goes off and shoots somebody over here. All right. Would that be okay? No, because that's not part of the government or proprietary function. Immunity wouldn't apply in the first instance, and even if it would, clearly outside the scope. And I want to back up to that for a minute. This outside the scope thing is important. That really is only, this was never intended for off-duty officers anyway, any of this type of stuff. The whole idea in the first instance, the outside the scope is an officer that's on duty and decides to go on a lark of his own, you know, decides during the course of he's on duty and decides to stop over at the local bar and do something or things like that. That's what the outside the scope was really intended for in the first place.
Is there a case that holds that we should look at?
I don't believe there is, Your Honor, but I think it's clear from the statute. When you look at the statute, it 2744.03a, it says in a civil action brought against against a political subdivision or an employee of a political subdivision to recover damages for injury, death, or loss to person or property allegedly caused by any act or omission in connection with a governmental or proprietary function. And I think that's important because here, the defendant was engaging in a barbecue at his house and showing off for friends and was drinking. He couldn't be on duty even if he wanted to. He was drinking alcohol and had been drinking alcohol. And that's why if you're going to engage in those type of activities, you know, you lose any type of immunity you would have while you're on duty, because now you're akin to a regular citizen who's holding a barbecue.
Excuse me. Did I read this correct? What was the use of the dog shock collar?
Was removed. It was on during the first part of the event, so to speak, when he was out there. But after he ate dinner, they took for some reason, the officer removed the shock collar from the dog. Not sure why.
Counsel, did the dog a light on anyone else other than your client?
On that day or ever?
That day, that afternoon, no. after eating and coming back out.
Bite, did you say?
Bite.
No, just my client when he, you know, tore into her breast.
Right.
And she had to ultimately have surgery.
Was there anybody else that the dog went after?
Not that day.
Okay, thank you.
Counsel, how did, if the officer was sued in his private individual capacity, how did it come that immunity became an issue that he was then ended up being represented by? Kurt, by representation, that immunity even became an issue.
That's a good question. It was being represented by, first of all, being provided a defense by his homeowner's insurance. No reservation of rights issued. State Farm tendered a defense and a lawyer to him, but they raised immunity defenses in their answer. It's a little bit of a head scratcher, I would admit, Your Honor, because they are.
So the insurance company is claiming political subdivision immunity, even though his lawyers are not public lawyers.
And we are not seeking public funds.
And you're not seeking public funds.
No, okay. This would be coming from private homeowners insurance. And it's important they've not issued a reservation of rights to show that they believe that he was outside the scope, and they believe this is covered under their policy.
How is that possibly relevant? I mean,
I think it's relevant, Your Honor, because it demonstrates a couple of things. Number one is that no public funds are being sought, and that was the governmental purpose.
That is not an issue in any of these claims. That's not an element of any claim here.
I think it's important because of the legislative intent
It's certainly, when you read that in your brief, it certainly gives the impression that you're trying to bring extraneous stuff in simply to sway us rather than focus on the merits of your claims.
Yeah, and that's not
it has nothing to do with any element of your claim that you have to show here today.
That's not the intent, Your Honor. The intent is this. The legislative purpose behind the statute was to make sure that officers and their and the public coffers were protected and were therefore showing that is not
the legislative purpose behind the statute has nothing to do with the analysis that we need to undertake.
But then Your Honor is welcome to ignore that portion of our brief if you don't believe it's relevant. We believed that it was. If we've misjudged on that, then that's on us. I would like to reserve a few minutes for rebuttal, too. Do I still have some time for that, the 3 minutes or so? Yeah, okay. I have three left now, or three plus the rebuttal. Three total. I would like to reserve some time for rebuttal, then, if I may.
Very well.
Thank you.
Mr. Mullen, good morning.
Good morning. Chief Justice Kennedy, Associate Judges, members of the Hamilton County area high schools, thank you for the warm welcome this morning, and it's my pleasure and my honor to represent Canine Officer Dustin Hildebrand in this particular case. And
counsel, you know, I'd like to follow up on Justice Stewart's question.
Okay.
If he's sued in his private capacity, how does immunity, political immunity, apply?
Because if you have immunity, someone doesn't get to shed it for you by claiming that they're not suing you individually. Very simple. It makes no difference how they sued him. It makes no difference whether or not they sued the Belmont County Commissioners. You certainly aren't bound by any claims decision made by the State Farm Insurance Company, but I would point out that my co-counsel in this case, who I don't believe is here today but is on the pleadings, was actually hired by, I believe it's Corsa, which insures the county. But we raised immunity because immunity applies. You know, a canine officer, when they are walking down the street on duty with the dog and the dog bites someone, they can't be sued personally. I mean, there's no question about that.
Is that immunity absolute, no matter what happens? Is there any limitation on it?
It would be the three exceptions in the statute if you could come up with facts to mold it. But
aren't there facts here that could arguably a reasonable jury might find that exercising the dog as alleged at a party where alcohol's being used and showing off the professional responsibilities of the dog in the backyard to a bunch of friends, couldn't a jury conclude that takes it outside the scope?
That would take a lot of speculation on the part of the jury, because there was no evidence that alcohol played a factor in this dog bite. And further, there was no evidence that the demonstration led to the dog bite.
And you could argue that to the jury, and they might agree with that. Well, but isn't that an issue of fact that
I don't think it is. It's one of those things. I don't know. I won't speak for your honors, but I don't know whether or not that made a police dog more likely to bite an hour and a half or 3 hours later. I just don't. I don't know if the dog thinks it's a crime scene 3 hours later.
Do you think giving alcohol to a dog is within the scope of the officer's employment?
I don't know that the dog had alcohol.
Well, there's testimony in the record that the dog did, and on summary judgment motion, we have to draw all inferences against your client. So we have to credit that inference.
I think that what that would take is some type of expert testimony that said the dog is that it's reckless. And let me say it this way:
you think it takes an expert for someone to decide whether it's reckless to give a police dog alcohol?
I don't know if it is or not. I would say that it is, Your Honor. But here, you still have to have proximate cause. Did it make the dog more likely to bite? And there was no expert testimony.
Well, those are two different questions, right? One is whether it's in the scope of employment. Two is a causation problem. Those are different. Those are not the same question.
You're right on that. But here's what I would say to that. The question that was certified as part of the first, or the question that was granted review, is whether or not a negligence complaint can strip a public employee of immunity. And it can't. I mean,
Whoa, right there. Okay. So we're public employees.
Right.
So are we immune 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, regardless of what we do?
Well, here's the deal with the police dog, and I'd started this thought earlier. The only evidence regarding the officer's responsibility vis-a-vis the dog was the affidavit of a supervisor, and the supervisor wasn't deposed. And that supervisor said, excuse me, Your Honor, that he's required to take the dog with him. He's required to have the dog at his house.
Right.
And he can't work as a canine officer if he doesn't.
Okay. So, but he wasn't working that day as a canine officer.
That is true, except for with respect to having the dog in his house.
Without question. And as I posed a question earlier to Mr. Bordas, this would be a different scenario. I mean, certainly the officer is entitled to have social events at his home. He is required to have the dog 24 hours a day. That is the dog's home, too. If there's a barbecue or an event going out in the backyard and the dog bites someone unintentionally, then that's at least a closer call in that he is required to have the officer 24 hours a day, as officers are required to have their firearms 24 hours a day. By example, Mr. Bordas gave, if in that backyard they were playing hot potato with the gun and it struck someone, would that be, should an officer be immune for that? And so you're saying are all public employees at every level, police, judges, even people who work for the state university, we can do whatever we want, but because we're public employees, we're immune?
Well, no, you've got the three exceptions. And I think what complicates this is that he wasn't on the job at the clocked in at the time. But if you decide that he is, he has immunity because he's required to keep the dog there, then it's their burden to prove an exception. And negligence can't do it. You know, the case law says that you can, an employee can be not reckless, but make stupid decisions, that type of thing, is still be within the scope of his employment. You've got three exceptions. The first one.
Well, before you get to the exceptions, though, are you saying that he is entitled to immunity at his home 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, because he's a canine officer, with regard to the dog?
With respect to the dog, yes, I am.
Okay.
Yeah, if the dog bites someone, he has immunity for that unless they prove an exception. And now think about this, Your Honors. They're claiming that he was negligent. So if he has immunity, what is the point of letting him shed it with an exception for negligence? He can't be sued if he's not negligent. You know, so what immunity is that? I mean, we all enjoy protection from being sued if we're not negligent. Now, the exceptions, our first one, I would agree with Attorney Bordas, the first one is the frolic, you know, manifestly outside of the scope of his employment. The second one makes my point that negligence isn't enough. And that's because it says what scienter or what level of conduct is required. It says reckless malice, that type of thing. If they would have meant to allow you to shed the immunity for negligence, they would have said so there. And employees, and particularly in public employees, are negligent all the time. You know, it does not shed their immunity when they're at work.
But isn't it a question of whether it's reckless to give a dog alcohol and to create, by using Mr. Bordas's words, a crime scene in your backyard, to use the canine for entertainment to show how he does his job?
Not in this case, it's not, because there's never been negligent or recklessness alleged in that complaint that was filed. And they stipulated at the Court of Appeals level that there is no evidence of recklessness in this case. And the question that was before this court is whether or not negligence, whether a canine officer at home is immune from lawsuits alleging negligence. And that's all we have in this particular case. I'd like to briefly discuss the second, Attorney Bordas didn't get to it, the whether or not the dog bite statute, the 955-28, hits the third exception. So you've got the frolic exception, I'll call it. You've got the bad conduct exception, which requires more than negligence. And then you've got whether or not
How is there possibly any jurisdiction over that issue?
There's not, Your Honor. But it's before the court, and you guys granted review. I will agree with you. The you know, at the Court of Appeals, we raised it wasn't the Rule 4 wasn't followed. I believe the court said the cross-claim isn't before us, so we have no jurisdiction over the issue. Then the Seventh District said, in addition, it wasn't a final appealable order, so they used the word, we don't have any authority over the issue. And then they went ahead and said what they thought about the issue. So that, I think that's what happened, and then it ended up here. But I don't believe that it is. However, if it's possible that you guys will rule on that issue, I would like to just briefly address it. The statute clearly says civil liability is expressly imposed upon the employee by a section of the revised code, and it's not enough that it simply state a mandatory duty. The court, this court, I don't believe, and if you have, I haven't found it, has never said whether or not the dog bite statute hits that exception. The courts of appeals below have all ruled that it does not, except for the Hicks decision out of the 10th or the 11th, but that was, in my opinion, contradictory with an earlier decision that they had had, that they didn't overrule. They tried to distinguish, but the 7th District, I think, pointed out that the way they distinguished it doesn't make a lot of sense. But the courts of appeals have ruled, or have followed, the reason they've come to that conclusion is because of this court's ruling on other statutes. You guys have set the rule for how, for instance, the 41-1202, the discrimination statute, in Hauser versus Dayton, you looked at that and said that doesn't affect a public employee because it is a general statute hitting everybody. In other words, there's got to be some indication that the intent of the statute was to abrogate immunity for a public employee, and it wasn't there. Same thing with the Nursing Home Bill of Rights statute. That was found to not be an exception to sovereign immunity under the Kramer case, which is 113 Ohio State 3rd, 266. Same thing. It was too general to expressly impose liability on political subdivision. Finally, child endangering statute uses the word person without reference to a political subdivision. So in the O'Toole case, which is 118 Ohio State 3rd, 374, this court found that that was not a statute that hit the C subsection, the statutory exception to the sovereign immunity. So in summary, Your Honor, if there's no more questions, you have the initial threshold analysis. Is the person in the course and scope of the employment? And in this case, as I've indicated, Deputy Hildebrand is not allowed to be an officer as a canine officer if he does not keep that dog. And the question is whether or not that serves some interest of the employer. And clearly it does.
So as I understand, your analysis is that once, because he's required to keep the dog, once he has that dog, nothing he does can be with it can be manifestly outside the scope of his employment.
Oh no! He could take the dog to the dog track, for instance, and race him or some. I mean, I guess I could think of situations where he could use the dog outside of the scope of his employment.
You don't think using the dog to do party tricks was outside the scope of his employment, like taking him to a racetrack?
No, I wouldn't call
it. That was something
tricks.
His employer envisioned him doing.
The reason he has drugs in his car is because he is to work with the dog and train the dog.
But that has nothing to do with him having.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
But him having drugs in the car has nothing to do with him using the dog as a party, you know, as to show off to his friends, right?
He basically allowed his friends to view a training exercise
at his social gathering.
At a social gathering, sure. Yeah, and as I've indicated before, you may think that's stupid, you may even think it's negligent, but it doesn't arise to manifestly outside of the scope of his employment, you know, and, you know, because what you're saying is you believe he was negligent. You know, if there was, and again, the subsection for conduct talks about malice, you know, that type of thing, recklessness, and that was stipulated in the 7th District is not at issue in this case, and we weren't sued for recklessness, we were sued for negligence. That's all the complaint
alleges.
What's
the time break? So
minimum of 90 minutes.
So he has the dog work the yard to demonstrate how the canine works. He places the dogs in the home. They have dinner. What's the time break between showing how the dog works, going into the home, and then coming back out, which is when the incident occurs?
I'm going to refer to my to my brief because I want to get it correct, but we have a table laid out, and the minimum window between the demonstrations, and this is on page 4, so people arrive between 4 and 5:30. At 5:30, at that point in time, sometime between 4 and 5:30, dog did the tricks in the backyard. 5:30, the guests ate dinner. The dog was put in the house while they did. It lasted 5:30 to 5:45. He was let back out into the yard at 6, somewhere between 6 and 6:15. And about an hour after that, the dog bit. So the minimum window would be between 5:30 and 7, which is 90 minutes. It could have been longer, depending on when the demonstration ended. We just have the window.
So going back to Justice DeWine's question, does that time parameter and the break in between, does that change
what it does is lessen the likelihood that there was any nexus between the between the demonstration and the bite. But there's no evidence that there was anyway. I mean, it's, you know, the dog didn't bite somebody during the demonstration or right thereafter. I mean,
but again, causation is not the issue, right?
But in terms of summary judgment, it sure is. I mean, you know, that's the, you know, it's hard for me to divorce myself from the fact
that it's not the issue on scope of employment, which is the issue that we have in front of us.
That would be correct, yeah. But still, I mean, you've got to have something to get to a jury with. I mean, you had asked earlier what are the disputed facts. There really aren't any. I mean, I don't know what they would be in this particular case.
Well, you just disputed. When I asked you about whether or not the dog consumed beer, you said you didn't think he had. There's conflicting testimony. That's a disputed fact, right?
Just between you and me, I'm going to trust your review of the and assume that is correct. I'm not saying it now. I just don't remember that.
So, hypothetically, if working the dog in the beginning is outside the scope, and then the dog goes inside, is it back inside scope of employment when he releases him back to the backyard, just amongst the social guests?
Right. Remember, Officer Hilder, dogs we know bite people. We know they tear things up, defecate, places where they shouldn't. And the officer is immune from those activities unless he's within an exception because he's required to house the dog there. You know, the dog lives there. When you go visit someone at their house, the dog might bite you. But with respect to that one, he doesn't have personal liability if they do, because he's required to house the dog.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Bordas, 3 minutes and 11 seconds left.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just because he's required to house the dog doesn't mean he's required to do tricks and everything else with house guests over when people are drinking alcohol and giving the dog beer to drink himself. And,
so,
and Your Honor
so
was correct. That
don't
the dog
put all drink. The time together, right? Because he does the tricks or he shows the audience how the dog works. There's a gap.
Yeah.
Goes inside. And then this dog is released with his other dog back into the backyard, not working. Is there a distinction amongst those times and those breaks?
Here's the reason it's an issue, Your Honor, and it's a good, excellent question. Time isn't the only factor. It's people and location as well. If the time break had happened, they went in to eat dinner, then they go over to the local park and he bites somebody over there after he'd been doing the alert commands an hour earlier, I would say I agree. But when this exact scene, these dogs can't make a distinction. When the exact scene, the exact same people were there, this dog now thinks these people, bad people, crime scene here. And Mr. Mullen noted that he said he has drugs in the car so that he can train as part. That's not what the record reflects. The record reflects that there are absolutely certain training places where these things are done, and at home is not one of them. That the only purpose of the dog being at the home is so that the the police officer and the dog can have a bond. It's not so that others can be around the dog, not so that the dog can be trained while he's at home. Absolutely, they're not supposed to train the dog at home. The fact that he went and got those drugs out of the car and created that scene is the important factor, the location and the people, not necessarily the time. So I agree with you.
I want to focus back on the time.
Sure.
Just a little bit so I understand it. The way I understand it, the dog ate and was released around 6. Is that right?
I think that's 6 or a little after.
Okay. And then the bite occurred at 7.
Ish, yes.
Seven-ish. How many people were there?
Total of 6, including the officer.
Okay. And the dog only bit the one, your client?
Yes.
Even though it was freely walking around for 50 minutes, let's say?
Yes. And that's the problem with the scene, Your Honor, and that's why I referenced that, because when you've placed drugs in a certain place around the yard, and then a person is going to pick up a yard toy there, and because they're playing games now, that may have been the precise location where the drugs were. And that's why you don't create this scene. That's why you don't do these dog training exercises out there at a social gathering where people are drinking alcohol and then enter the dog back into that same scene some relatively close time later, because that person may be in the exact spot where the drugs were and that dog can't make that distinction like we as humans can. That was an exercise. These people are good people. My owner told me these are good people. They can't make that distinction. So that's why you don't go about this. That's outside the course and scope. There's no way, impossibility, anybody in that police department would have ever thought that this is something okay for him to be doing with this dog as part of his keeping the dog at home responsibilities, is to be going getting drugs out of the car and at a barbecue where people are drinking, go start doing the, giving the alert commands and getting drugs out. Nobody would have ever thought that that was part of the scope of employment. No chance.
Does the time really matter if the dog was given alcohol? Do we have to assume the dog sobered up by that time?
We'll ask the college students. They're more used to that now. I'm a little further removed from that than probably they are.
In your complaint, though, it is negligence that's alleged, right?
Negligence and strict liability
right,
both
right.
apply.
On the second thing.
Yes.
But on the first, negligence. Is it your contention that a police officer off duty have to have the dog with them, though? No matter what happened, there would be liability?
No, that's not our position. Our position is that's why you have to look at, and quite the opposite. Our position is that you have to look at the conduct. If the First of all, I think under the revised code that there would be strict liability, but I don't think that's as strong of an argument for us, and I don't think we need it here. But I think when you look at, you have to look at the conduct of the officer, and what they're asking is for, and they said it, they, as it pertains to the dog, that officer is on duty at all times, was their position. And we're saying that can't be the case. That can't be the case. At some point, when the officer's acting as a regular dog keeper and harborer, that's different than when you're acting in the course and scope. And if, you know, there are certain things he has to do with the dog, but one of them is not going through these alert commands and transfers when you're at a barbecue where people are drinking and then giving the dog alcohol to drink, and then let's see what happens here. That's not a good idea. It's no different than the hot potato with the gun being tossed around. You got to have the gun at home, but that doesn't mean anything that happens with your gun, you're immune. If you're negligent, and that's where you have to look at not the conduct of the dog, but the conduct of the officer. And I think that's the important distinction here, is the conduct of the officer.
So are you saying that he can go in and out of scope?
Sure. I think that can happen. I think depending upon what's happening. And that's where it comes with respect to, first of all, I think when they're off duty, the immunity doesn't apply. But certainly once it, if there's an argument made that it does, then certainly there can be instances where it could be inside the scope.
So he's not hosting a barbecue, and he's in his home with this dog, and she just rings the doorbell, comes into the house, and there's a bite.
I think under the way the revised code's written, and none of us wrote it, I think that there was, it would still be strict liability the way the code's written, but I think that certainly that's not our strongest argument, and I think that there would have to be negligence perhaps with respect to the officer, and I don't know that in that instance there would be. I don't know all the facts of your hypothetical, but I think there are instances where that could be okay, and the officer would not be liable.
When your client was bitten, what did the dog have that choke collar, the shock collar on?
No.
And when the dog is working, does it wear the shock collar?
That's my understanding.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll receive a decision from the court.